Fly that W, let's go. It's Jet Theory Radio. From the ATX, welcome to Jet Theory Radio. This is episode number 12. I am David, but you may know me better as the one they call Jetter. I want to thank you for tuning in and giving us a listen to this week. We got a lot to talk about. Joining us here this week, to my left, as always, except for last time when he missed out, I'll give you a little bit of harassment for that. That's all right. Mr. Gail Murren.
Hi, I'm the Shady Justice, Jetter's voice of reason.
You know,
apparently, the episode without me probably went into the toilet, but I guess it didn't. Sorry, ladies, I missed it.
You know, we found the reason that you had the nickname Shady in the 90s, and I'll just wait and let you listen to the podcast to find out.
I don't mean to interrupt, but was that not your fucking AIM handle back in the day?
Yes, it was.
Fair.
That voice you heard, one of two people that we have on the podcast here with us tonight, Mr. Eric Braun.
Hello.
Mr. Dave Hawkins.
Hi.
How's it going there for you, gents?
Going good. All right.
Glad to be here.
Good, good, good. All right, we got a bunch of stuff to talk about. It's going to range from, you know, we got a couple of people who've been busy with bands and stuff here in the Austin. We're going to be talking a little bit about that. All right, we're going to be battling out, and this is going to be fun because some of these songs are entertaining as fuck. Best 90s one-hit wonder. And then if we got some time, we'll dabble a little bit about Game of Thrones. Spoilers beware toward that one because, well, you got to be caught up to really know what we're talking about. But
we
first,
don't give a fuck.
Exactly. First, Mr. Murren, flying that W last night. You saw that. You were there with me.
Yes. So I was busy most of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And then I walked in the door to a two out, two strike single by Anthony Rizzo. It was just good to see the champion Chicago Cubs flying a championship flag for the first time in my lifetime or anyone I know's lifetime.
Yes. I was really appreciative of the moment simply because Rizzo, who came out when they first started the game, he came out and he was the one who hoisted the World Series trophy over his head. And then he was the one that came in with the walk-off at the end. There's a poetry to that. It's just so sweet.
To be fair, speaking of Austin, there's a 104-year-old World War II vet that was real close to seeing that World Series championship.
Yeah, he was really close. I also don't know him.
But, you know, there actually has to be somewhere in the world, like some 118-year-old who recalls like American sports of that day. There's got to be somewhere, I would think. Maybe. Who knows?
Is there a Okay, so
do you really think there's a 118-year-old in the world somewhere?
Oh, yeah. Like 123.
Definitely not in this country, though.
Yeah.
That would be
it'd be outside of this country.
Well, there's that, what's that island near Japan where everyone lives to like 125 or something, and all they eat is rice and sushi, and there's no bullshit there at all?
Mm-hmm. Probably from there. Yeah. So then they didn't see it anyway because they didn't hear the news because, it's over there. It's that little crazy country off to the side.
This is borderline racist, guys.
I don't think
it's borderline.
I'm pretty sure it's not.
Okay. All right. On that note, let's do a little bit of a promotion of your guys' bands. That's
right.
A good segue.
That's definitely not racist at all.
Exactly. Now, Eric, you weren't here for the Later Days episode, and you're one of the members of Later Days.
I know. I quit the band for like 3 days. It was weird.
I know. I was sad and disappointed, but then you came back, and it was all good.
That actually didn't happen. But yeah, I listened to it and it was a lot of fun, and I 100% agree with all the things that y'all talked about. It was very entertaining, especially hearing Brendan yell things from the back of the room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was good. You guys did a good job with that.
So you especially agreed with the part where they all like almost had an intervention with you about some closeted tendencies you have. Like they're really supportive of you. We all know. We just want you to come out, just say it. We all support you. We all love you. We all care for you. This is a safe area here, okay?
Fair.
Just so you know, If it happens during this podcast and you just need to announce it to the world that way, go right ahead.
Do you have a guitar fetish?
Yeah.
Reluctant, but he was did it. How we got to be supportive. Guys.
How many guitars do you have?
I mean, fuck this. How many guitars does Nate have?
Oh, deflection.
It's more of circumnavigation, actually. I have 9.
Jesus.
You know what? We got guys. we have to be a little bit supportive here. So thank you, Eric. Thank you very much.
Hold on. 11, counting the bass and the mandolin. I forgot about those.
Slowly, more and more details come out. That's okay. We still love you. We still support you. So you play with the Later Days, Dave. What bands do you hang around with downtown?
Currently, just the Del Vipers.
Mm-hmm.
I played with Later Days on their record, and then for like what, 5 shows or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that was it.
Del Vipers. What kind of style of music are they?
It's like surf punk instrumental music that almost nobody likes. It's really great.
It's kind of like if you listen to that band, you feel like you're smoking a cigar in a smooth jazz lounge in the 1960s, and you're trying to covertly hide from James Bond while a super evil villain is trying to take over the world in the next room.
That is just as specific as his description as well. So yeah, it's a very eclectic music I'm going to go with.
That's really nice. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I like that. I like the description.
Thanks.
Yeah. Both were very, very poetic. I enjoyed hearing that. Okay, so let's see. We wanted to dive a little bit and then talk about what your guys' experience has been as, like, you know, members of different bands and stuff like that in Austin. How's it been for you? Are there any places that are awesome to play at? Any places that have been just like, eh? Any, like, experiences, war stories? I mean, just open field here. Whatever first pops up to mind there.
It's interesting with Dave because, and this is not remotely in any way, shape, or form answering your question, but my experience with Dave, which is why I think it's cool to be doing this with him, is like, I remember seeing Cruiserweight, which this is kind of going to bring it all together for us, but at Illinois State University, there was a small little student-ran organization called Benchmark Music Productions, and it was like Joe Kalis?
Yeah, Joe Kalis.
Joe Kalis and a mm-hmm. couple other people, and I was in a band at the time called American Flatline. Mm-hmm. With some super tight homies, childhood friends. It's actually around the time that I met Mr. Shady Justice over here. That's another story for another time, though.
Yep.
But I remember seeing Cruiserweight at the Bone Student Center.
You remember this. I don't remember it at all. We've talked about this, but I don't remember it at all. You remember it with
maybe I'm making
terrifying
it
clarity.
Maybe I'm making it up. I don't think I'm making it up.
No, yeah, we've talked about it before. I'm pretty sure we all played together, but...
Yeah, and it's, you know, I didn't know Dave then, mm-hmm. but, like, I moved to Austin, I guess, 10 years ago, and I was super familiar with Cruiserweight. I actually remember being shockingly reminded of Cruiserweight because one of my favorite bands, like, ever in the history of rock music is Sam I Am,
mm-hmm.
and y'all played at Old School Red 7
yep.
with Sam I Am, yeah. and that was the first time I'd seen you guys in, like, 6 or 7 years.
Oh, you were at that show?
We probably
talked about this, but I don't remember it, yeah. That show was a big deal for me.
Yeah. No shit, right?
Yeah.
That was like one of those one-off tours where they played like randomly like 3 Texas dates or
yep.
something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of when it all came back to me. And it's funny, like Dave, we've had the opportunity to like not only become like really good friends, but like, I mean, Dave has produced 3 records that I've either written or played on or whatever.
3 or 4.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, yeah, because we did the Riot Scene stuff together, too.
Yep.
God damn, that's when we first started.
And Goodbye Endeavor.
Oh, shit, so yeah. like 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then 2 Closet Drama records.
And 1 single.
Yeah. So to kind of come back to what you're asking, like, I mean, you know, Red 7 back in the day, that was great. Like, it's just, Austin's just, you know, it's transformed so much in a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And it's cool to have Dave here because he's been here longer than I have. And he's been playing shows in Austin a lot longer than I have. But, you know, Red River, 6th Street, all that stuff, it's a wee bit different now. Red 7's mm-hmm. Barracuda now.
Yeah, a lot of the memories I have from specific venues, a lot of those venues are gone. Which, that's not mm-hmm. to say there aren't still some good ones here. Mohawk's amazing, Cheer Ups is awesome. But yeah, like old emos is long gone.
I mean, that's heartbreaking. Yeah.
So if you've been here 10 years, Eric, how long have you been here?
I got here in 99.
99? Okay.
Longer than what I thought. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So long time. So then I guess you've probably had more of the history of like how the scene has changed from even back then to now. Obviously it's different.
Yeah.
In a different vein there. Is it more opportunity for more of a diverse amount of bands and style of music, or is it more or less the same, or what's...
Actually, it's like, even though the venues have changed and the population here has changed, scene-wise, it's not that different. There's just even more bands. There was a shitload of bands back then, too. I feel like it has always been hard to break through here because there's so many bands, and it was that way in 99, and I think it's still that way now, so... I mean, yeah. Luckily, there still are a shit ton of bands. Like, I feel like there's probably a ton of cities that have the same story as Austin, where it's like, yeah, and then like the rich people moved in, and musicians couldn't afford to live here, and so now there aren't as many bands. But luckily, that has not been the case yet. So,
oddly enough, I mean, Later Days played a really rad show last night at Sidewinder. I mean, it was a Monday night, but it was, you know, there was a touring band from Arizona called Sundress that played, and our friends in Nominee played. They asked us to play their kind of homecoming tour show. And I was walking down the street with Sam, our drummer, and he was like, this feels like old Austin, because it was kind of like, it was kind of dreary and wet last night, and there was just like crackheads walking around.
And like, you know, less yuppies.
Yeah, Monday. There was nobody out, you know, like nobody's really bothering you, but like there's people that are out of their goddamn mind walking around because the sun is setting on Red River, and you're just like... Man, fucking downtown at 6 p.m., am I right? Like, but, you know, that's kind of how it was when I first moved here. The first thing that struck me about Austin is that it was a sleepy city. It was very sleepy. And it was funny because, like, we went down to Jack Loeb last night to get a slice of pizza before we played. And I kind of just turned and looked at Sam, and I was like, this is fucking weird, man. This is, like, the first place I ever came to when I moved here. I remember, like... putting everything in a van and like moving to Austin, and we checked into that whatever that god awful hotel is on. It's like right on what used to be Town Lake, Ladybird Lake, the little tower thing that's like a Holiday Inn or whatever. It's like right there.
Yeah,
off
yeah.
Of Holly.
Mm-hmm. I think it's Holly. Yeah.
And we didn't know what to like. We didn't move into our apartment until like the next day, and we did a pretty good job of like setting things up, but like we didn't have anything to do. So I mean, Will, y'all have had Will on your podcast before. Yep. He was already living here, and I called Will, and Will was like, okay, well, meet me at Jack Loeb. You're going to love this place. And I was telling Sam last night, that's literally the first place I ever walked into when I first moved here 10 years ago. And, like, it's just funny because, like, 6th Street and Red River is, like, so much different now. Kind of going back to that, like, Red 7 conversation with, like, Sam I Am Cruiserweight. Like, I mean, that was inside. Like, that was back when the stage was in that
corner.
Weird...
That was awful, yeah.
You know, and I walked past Barracuda last night going to the gas station to get cigarettes, and I'm like, there's fucking stained glass windows on this place. Yeah. Like, what's happening?
Wow. Yeah.
I remember, like, seeing Plea for, or not, or Shirts for a Cure, like, at South By, those shows back in the day when it was, like, that free Friday show at Red 7 when it was, like, Hot Water Music, and, like, I remember the first time I ever saw the Gaslight Anthem before anybody knew who that band was, like, opening for Hot Water Music, and, like, Darkest Hour played. And, like, just, like, all these random bands, you know, that's a whole
other... Has there ever been, like, a band, like, in all the years you guys have been here in town, has there been a band that you've seen that's grown beyond just playing in Austin that's made it more on a national kind of stage?
Not very much. There used to be kind of jokes back in the day about how bands would never, like, you know, even if you got big locally here, it didn't mean shit. Like, bands very rarely broke out of here. There are exceptions, obviously, Spoon like now.
River Road Gamblers.
Gamblers.
I mean, you have Gary Clark Jr., which
totally.
I'm not sure if that counts, but...
I think so, yeah, totally. Like, we were talking about Fastball, you know, kind of had with a one hit that was real big.
I mean, you could say Survive most recently.
Sure, yeah, totally.
I mean, the dudes that did the Stranger Things soundtrack.
Oh, yeah definitely,
like Austin Sense.
So there's been a few.
Why is that?
I don't know, actually.
Well, having, you know, y'all did the Later Days thing, and I wasn't here for that, but, like, you know, what we found interesting being a band from Austin is, like, once you go on tour, like, when you decide to make that commitment and, you know, drive 1,200 miles in 11 days, like, that's when you realize, like, how really difficult Austin can be. Because you kind of just play the same shows with the same people, and Dave was kind of talking about earlier about how it's, you know, it's not that much different, and I feel like the scene in and of itself these days is very supportive. It's very, you know, bands do a really good job of watching out for each other here. You know, like they, because it's kind of like, it's this, it's a little bit of a, like, us versus the world mentality, because you have a lot of venues that are struggling to stay open because, you know, the real estate value and the rent is raising left and right. And that's kind of like why you get a lot of transitions, like in the Red River, Sixth Street area. That's just like very, very hard for things to continue to survive. But you just sort of keep playing the same shows with the same bands, and you just, you know, you start, you just keep seeing the same people all the time, and it's fantastic. Like, it's very supportive, but like once you get out there and like you go on tour, it's like, oh, this band's from Austin. Mm-hmm. And then that whole stigma about being a band from Austin sort of starts doing you a little bit more good.
What's the, I guess, what's the stigma that goes with it? That like you're,
well, I mean, the live music capital of the world, right? Like, okay. I mean, we're like, I mean, Austin is like gutter Nashville to me. Like, you know, it's like, I mean, Nashville's a cool town, but it's also like, you know, speaking of stigmas, it's got this like country music vibe. And I know Dave lived in LA for a while and like did the whole music production thing in LA and worked at a prominent studio and just, you know, I think you liked it, but I think ultimately you kind of didn't like it.
Yeah, no, it's just LA is socially difficult.
For
but,
sure.
No, but actually, but speaking of that, while I was there, every time that I met someone and told them that I was from Austin, they, every single time they were like, oh my God, Austin's the coolest. I'm like, it still is, despite the growth and all, everything, it's still somehow super cool to be from here or to be a band from here. I don't know. It hasn't gone away yet. So.
Yeah. Well, before I moved down and I was telling people about Austin, they're like, yeah, that's really cool. Like, that's going to be a cool place. You can go out and stuff like that. And I, like, for me, I never really went to like see live shows, because that just was never something that was like nice and convenient. Oh, I go down a block and there's a bar and it's going to have three really good, like, I really haven't walked into anywhere and walked out being like, what the fuck did I just listen to? This is shit. This is garbage. Mm-hmm. You don't have that here. You have a really good of like, yeah, this is cool, to this is spectacular. Like, that nice range is good to hear.
What's really refreshing about Austin, in my opinion, at this point in time, having been here for 10 years now, is like, you kind of think about like the real estate bubble, like, and the recession that happened, you know, like 10 years ago. It, like, I feel like Austin is kind of like a microcosm of like what happens in just the United States in general, because like you know, Austin is constantly voted like, you know, it's the best place to live, blah, 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 like Forbes, whatever, like, you know, it has all these things to offer. But like, you know, you compare it to cities like LA, or you compare it to cities like New York, or now, like, you kind of look like you sort of compare it. You can kind of get it now with like Portland or like Asheville, you know what I mean? Like, these kind of up and coming smaller towns that have this like niche craft kind of feel to them. But I feel like the bubble and like the critical mass thing has already happened with Austin.
Hopefully.
Because I think you see, you know, like, sure.
I can still barely afford to live here. Hopefully I can still stay here.
Well, as a homeowner then, aren't you concerned for that? Because
Because
your property value would...
You know, we'll see though, because like, I think, you know, you kind of like look at things like South by Southwest, and you know, you look at what we were talking about with like bands taking care of each other, and what Dave said about like bands, you know, it's still cool to be from Austin, to be a band from Austin.
Oh yeah.
Like, the city and like the people here have done a good job of like, hey, this is important. We don't want to lose this feel. Let's keep Austin weird.
Yeah.
You know, let's dial back South by this year. Like, you know, ACL's pretty fucking douchey now, so like, let's split it up into two weekends, you know. It's just like, you kind of get that whole thing going, and it's like, I feel like Austin's trying to like again, like, dial it back a little bit, you know.
It does feel that way. Yeah.
Yeah. And property value wise, I mean, if you talk about Sixth Street and Red River, like, the one thing that's cool to me about Austin is like, you on the east side, you know, and I live on the east side, and there's it's like a, you know, a stone's throw to a lot of the places that I hang out, and I was lucky enough to be able to do that for myself. But like, you know, like, if you go like East 6th Street or like even Cesar Chavez now, that's where like that kind of hip rad Austin culture is going, is drifting towards, you know. That's the kind of stuff that was on Red River when I moved here, and even 6th Street to some effect.
Now, what about like the Domain up north? And we were there the other night, the Mueller area.
I would rather die in a fire than go to the Domain. But I did happen to like the Mueller. I mean, I've always liked Mueller.
Yeah, Mueller's all right.
What's that street called?
Rock Rose.
No.
Is that what you're talking about?
No, we went to go see Dracula's at
Barrel of Fun.
Barrel of Fun. And Mueller.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But there's some street that starts with an A that like looks like they're gonna do the exact same thing as Rock Rose, but it's Mueller, so it's hopefully a little bit
hopefully
cooler.
Hopefully better, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
But even when Gail first moved here, we lived off of 51st in University Heights, and you know we were like literally across the street from Nomad, and like that's I feel like the same vibe.
I lived in that neighborhood for years.
Yeah.
With Cruiserweight actually.
We lived with some of the dudes in remember the band Masonic, like Brian Mason.
Oh yeah, we talked about this. That's right. Yeah
and
totally.
John lived like right across the street. So.
Cool.
Yeah. That's still got that East kind of vibe up there, too. You know, gentrification.
Right? I just experienced... is Rock Rose the one at the Domain?
Yeah.
I just experienced that for the first time, like, 2 weeks ago.
Would you like to go have brunch with a DJ?
I would not like to do that. I feel like a criminal when I'm walking around the Domain. There's, like, smooth jazz coming out of hidden speakers in the trees that are just like, buy shit. And I'm like, I don't feel okay when I'm there, ever. It's not. I feel unwelcome.
It's definitely like the, well, if tourists are going to come here, let them go and shop and buy stuff in this area of town. So that way money's left behind at least.
Mm-hmm. It's very Dallas to me.
What's that mean, very Dallas? Like, I don't, I've heard you say it a few times and I'm just like, okay, what's...
It's that. I mean, I grew up there. It's like, it's definitely that. It's very like, homogenized. Totally. Outdoor mall, homogenized, shopping centric.
Everything's clean and urban and like convenient, and you can get your fucking like frothy chai tea with a shot of B12 in it, and like go fucking buy your black and white dress at fucking whatever store that no one cares. I mean, I'm sure some people care about those stores, but it's weird. I agree with Dave. It makes you feel like a weirdo.
Definitely doesn't sound like the kind of like from what I've gotten to understand about Austin, like how this town is more like we're more unique. Like you know,
it's not weird.
It's not weird at all.
Yeah.
When I first moved here, everybody would obsess over Buffalo Exchange.
Yeah.
You know, that's where everybody would like go buy their clothes and shit, and like people would raid Goodwills and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's, you know, the Domain.
Enough people started doing it, and they're like, "How can we make this into a bigger profit?"
Fair.
All right. In that case, are you ready, Myrn?
Let's battle.
All right, if you say so, Myrn. Let's get the battle on.
Battle time!
Alrighty. This week's battle. We do this twice a week. Why am I saying this week? This episode's battle is more like it. That's the more exact phrase there.
Yeah,
we decided, you know, let's get a little musical. Let's get a little bit crazy musical. Crazy specific musical. Well, we're going to be talking about what is the best 90s one-hit wonder. Now, you're struggling through, like, how to really define one-hit wonder, but pretty much we all got our picks, and we all said, yeah, these are people that if you name one song, you'll only know this one song, and this will be it for the band. So that was our qualification there for it. I'll start off here, and I went with a nice, super cheesy one. Came in late in 99, so it still technically counts. It is Tal Bachman's She's So High. And I would recommend if you need to pause this to search for that, actually for any of these, if you want to pause them after we all introduce them, do that. Listen to a little bit so you get that in your head and then listen to the rest of this podcast. Mr. Murren, the shady one.
So I went with What Is Love? The 1993 hit from Hathaway. On his album called, this is the best album name, The Album. You will know this song from Night of the Roxbury. This is the head bob song.
I mean, it's not like, you know, the jam or the band.
All right, wait.
It's The Album.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
The Album.
Kind of genius, actually.
You're uncertain if they put literally the least amount of effort possible into titling their album The Album, or if there's some brilliant underlining theme here. I hate music.
Dave, what'd you go with?
Do Eric first, because I just realized, I should look this up, so I have the information. I have no idea the record or anything.
Right. So... I chose this song for a few reasons. the biggest reason that I chose this song is because this band literally failed at absolutely everything that they did besides go gold with this single and sell 500,000 copies of the album, not the album, the album, in the meantime. I'm sorry, excuse me, the album was called Resident Alien, but the song, In the Meantime, by Space Hog. I picked the song for a lot of reasons. Pretty random and ridiculous band. Somewhere in between garage rock and glam rock does this band exist. They're all from Britain, but they formed the band in New York. And I also chose this song because Gail and I actually saw this band, and he doesn't remember this. But we went to one of that douchebag from Everclear Art, whatever his name is, Summerland tour things. And we went to go we were super stoked about Soul Asylum at Moody Theater.
Of course you were.
We were way stoked about Soul Asylum. somebody else was playing the show. It was like Eve 6 and Soul Asylum and Everclear. But the opening band was Space Hog.
Yeah. So, I forgot. And we
only saw like the last 30 seconds of the last song.
Like, oh, hey, it's that song.
It's that song. It's that band.
So you basically just thought...
Yeah. It was like... You know. It was like, it doesn't get any more 90s alt-rock than that guitar riff and that bass line and that jerk-off wearing his aviator sunglasses and his leather pants.
Oh, no.
But yeah.
All right, Dave, you've had time to research?
I have. I did the Proclaimers. I'm gonna be, parentheses, 500 miles. I don't know really how to make a case for this. I just think it's a really great love song. I feel like you could probably hear it at karaoke in any karaoke bar, any night, in any city in the country, probably. I feel like it's a really timeless song. That's kind of it, but it's really just my opinion. I don't really have a good argument for it, honestly.
Can you read what Wikipedia classified that as that we were laughing at?
Genre. Celtic rock.
What?
Because they're Irish, yeah. I mean, so it's, yeah.
That's interesting.
That's all right. My guys.
So that, and it's folk music.
That immediately brings folk to mind rock, the fact that, like, you think these guys are going to be wearing kilts, right?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that is not the case because we all vividly recall the video for that song, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dude was totally wearing white Reeboks and, like, stonewashed, like, pleated Levi's with his white shirt tucked in to his pants with no fucking belt.
So clearly he was going against the Celtic rock being alternative.
I wonder if that Celtic rock came in later, like not initially when they came out. I bet they classified themselves as alternative, but then eventually people were like, no, you're Celtic.
Some marketing douche at whatever label was like, you know, yeah, found a way to sell it and turn it into this thing. And now you hear that song every fucking St. Patty's Day, which, you know,
whatever. I got to give you props, though. I love that song.
Everyone loves that song.
Is it okay? Out of any of these songs, is there any songs that anybody absolutely hates?
I really guiltily like the song that I picked a lot.
I think we all in our own ways did.
Yeah. In my heart of hearts, I'm a Space Hog fan.
I actually don't even like my own song. I just picked it because it's on Night of the Roxbury.
Oh, man, that song is classic.
I mean it plays its point. It is What Is Love. I can't even sing it.
Yeah. What Is Love, Baby Don't Hurt Me. Don't Hurt
What It Is for no Me more. Is it's Night of the Roxbury. It's about the movie.
I was thinking maybe so we more... could lyrically deconstruct that song for a second. Because I mean it's rhetorical what for sure. Love,
baby Are you Don't sure? Hurt Me.
I thought it was more philosophical than what they were trying
me.
To do.
I'm pretty sure it's rhetorical. What is love? It's an open-ended question, but then it's immediately followed by a statement, baby, don't hurt me. Is he asking the universe what is love, or is he asking the baby that's going to hurt him what is love? Like, I'm...
Well, is baby I mean, a figurative baby? Is it a literal baby? Is it like, you're my baby darling? Like, also, what is the word you use the word baby?
I just want to bring it back that he named the album The Album. So clearly, either we don't know if it is clearly very simple... Or this has some super deep meaning we are never going to get.
I'm going to go with, you know, kind of how Dave was saying, like, some marketing douche somewhere figured out how to spin the Proclaimers as a Celtic rock band. I'm going to go with, like, the producer that was recording the vocals for that song was like, yo, cut two or three words out of that line because this delay is about to kick and it's going to be tight. That's what happened.
The argument, though, for your song is that it's, like, entwined with, woven into, like, pop culture because of The Night at the Roxbury.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So there's, like, a very, like, strong, like, visual image that goes with it. Like, we were talking about before, like, all of our songs are in movies, but, like, not like Night at the Roxbury. Like, that one, yeah. That's, like, that is fused to that song.
Yeah, when you hear that line, it's basically your head just starts bobbing in a very specific mm-hmm. manner. It's, I mean,
but do you really think about the movie when you think about that, or more the SNL skit?
That's exactly what I was going to bring up, because, mm-hmm. like, that's an interesting thing about that song, because that song was prolific when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty sure, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'm pretty sure that it was, like, on a bunch of, like, Now 8, Now 9, or, like,
oh,
stuff
yeah,
like
yeah.
that. But, like, very, well, I don't most know. Of the time, like, you see, like, a song that's that prolific, like, make... You know, if you take, like, a movie scene and you put a very prolific song in it, like, you know, like, any of the scenes in, like, The Big Lebowski when it's, like, the Eagles playing, you know, mm-hmm. like, that just makes the scene stand out for what it is. But it's actually just the opposite with that song, because, like, the skit in the movie put that song back into rotation in people's brains.
Mm-hmm.
Not because the song's good, but because the skit in the movie, yeah. like, I mean, that's kind of interesting if you think about it, because normally music has the opposite effect on film.
Although I would say out of any of them, yours is probably going to be played at most high school, junior high dances. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Really now? What, like, seriously?
I would think it would have a better chance being played now, your song, than any of our songs.
Yeah, that's probably true.
That's sad. I mean, there's
a moment right now where yeah. if you're not visually seeing this, like, there was, like, a draining of, like, the colors in his face. It's just like, oh,
man.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, it's just like, you know, good, solid, like, organic rock music. It just is not it on the front of people's palates anymore. Like, and that's... Well, hyperly depressing to me.
There's some, I'm sure, that are out there like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I remember going to junior high dances and, like, giving Mr. Shu at Chittick's Junior High School a fucking copy of Foo Fighters', you know, first record, self-titled, and asking mm-hmm. him to play, like, Last Call or something like that, you uh-huh. know, and, like, he would do it, but he's like, well, can't play more than one of these songs. I mean, it's just like, but no, you're probably right. Yeah. I'm sure that, like, there's, like, literally 10,000 wedding DJs that have that song mm-hmm. in strong rotation.
Yeah.
Like, when everybody gets Mazel Tov drunk enough to, like, start dancing and take their shoes off mm-hmm. at whatever event space they rented for their god-awful wedding.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Oh, yeah. Again, you're getting really specifics, but I like it because it's just such a specific argument.
Nice and descriptive.
Yes. Wait. Take that back. About the pop culture thing, because I think 500 Miles came back in pop culture thanks to How I Met Your Mother, which I was telling you guys about that yeah. earlier, because it's just the one song that constantly plays in Marshall's car because the tape is jammed to that song.
Apparently, it was originally in Benny and June, which I didn't know until I saw the Wikipedia. But you guys remember that movie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
That song... We can go back to that song because, like, if I had to compare, like, that song to me is like a period piece. Does that make sense at all? Like, if I could compare anything to, like, that song, it would be like 99 Red Balloons. That's okay. That song makes me feel very okay. similar to that, like, hearing those two songs. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like hearing, like, Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears. Like, that's a fucking period song. Like, sure. It reminds me of, like, watching VH1 when I was, like, you know, or 6 years
you
old.
You're saying you associate it with a specific point in time.
Yeah, for yeah. sure. But
or
Benny and June, I mean.
REM song that's in Independence Day.
Funny.
Will always be known for that moment in time.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Yeah. Oh,
that, it's
yeah.
funny
yeah.
that you bring up REM because on the second Space Hog record, Michael Stipe did backup vocals.
Ooh.
Full circle.
Name dropping for Space.
That's fantastic.
I have the same feeling about like the Postal Service record. Like, everyone I know that loves that record associates it with a very specific time in their life. I think that's a really cool thing when an album or song can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna drop a bomb on you right now. Something to Write Home About by the Get Up Kids.
Yeah.
Boom.
Same. Same.
That'll do it for you every time.
I'm trying to think with mine. Like, I actually distinctly remember She's So High by Tal Bachman because there was some girl I was like head over heels with when I was working at Steak and Shake. And that was when the song came out. And like, for whatever reason, I don't even know like which girl it was. Like, whatever the girl was, the hot server at the time there, something like that.
That is literally the third time in 2 days that Steak and Shake has been brought up in my life.
It's good. Steak and Shake is good. Steak and Shake is great.
So, earlier...
As a diuretic.
Yes.
Earlier I had mentioned how Gail and I met, mm-hmm. but I think that there's some highlights from that night that we should probably go over.
Oh, I would love to hear this.
What? No.
So, the first time I met you... was at a party. I was a senior in high school, and you had just came back from SIU.
Yeah.
And it was at Paul's house.
Yeah.
And it's so iconic to me because I was in American Flatline. I just mm-hmm. joined American Flatline, and they were all really good friends with you. And I roll in, and I wasn't much of a drinker back then, but...
He's more than made
clearly
up for it.
After what we're about to say, I don't think any of us were actually much of drinkers at that point.
So I think I was 19, maybe 18. I don't remember, but I get handed a drink, and the drink consists of somebody pouring out about 13 to 15% of a Zima and filling it with peach schnapps and putting a Jolly Rancher in it.
Thanks, Paul and Sieb.
Fair. That was the first night I met you, though.
Yeah.
That was the thing back then.
I'm sad we don't have that drink right now for you guys to share together.
They're bringing Zima back.
I heard that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to buy it.
I don't know how I feel about
that. So, I think I know why you brought that up.
I'm going to go on the record here and say I'm against that. I'm not for that.
It's like sugar alcohol. As soon as it comes out, and the next time I see both of you, I'm bringing a six-pack of Zima. Every single Zima in the six-pack is 13 to 15% emptied.
Already?
Filled with peach schnapps. I'm going to pre-empty them for you. Peach schnapps, Jolly Rancher, different flavors in each one. I'm going to reseal them.
I'm holding you to this.
I'm going
to
do it.
I'm going to be let down if this doesn't happen.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me.
But guys, what is love? What is it? Baby, don't hurt me.
No mo.
No mo. Don't forget line four.
Are all these? Well, okay. I'm just thinking. Love related. 500 miles, is that love related?
Definitely, yeah.
In the meantime, love related?
I'm going to have to look up the lyrics real quick.
Okay, no problem. I know this. If this was in Canada, my guy would win Canada. Because he came from Canada, and apparently was the number one in Canada, but only top 10 in the U.S.
Interesting.
Oh, my song only made it to number 11 on the Billboard.
I'm sure mine did quite well in the Celtic rock circles.
It was the iTunes Music Celtic Heat Seekers.
Wow.
There was going to be some like 2 a.m. infomercial, best of Celtic rock, and they are the featured band on it.
All right, guys. I really feel like my song choice is just getting more fantastic by the second here, though, because... Speaking of the chorus of your song, the chorus of this song, we love the all of you.
We love the all of you.
Where the lands are green and the skies are blue. When all in all we're just like you, we love the all of you.
Deep.
Is that rhetorical or philosophical?
Is that like a love song to America?
Hold on. The first lyrics of the song. And in the end, we shall achieve in time the thing they call divine. And all the stars will shine for me when all is well. And well is all for all. Forever after, living in the meantime, wait and see.
This dude is fired. Come on.
How much acid did you do when you wrote that song? Jesus Christ. When I cry for me, I cry for you with the tears of holy joy. For all the days still to come, And did I ever say I'd never play or fly toward the sun? Living in the meantime, something's gone.
Guys, this a love song?
I lost. I ruined the battle.
All right, fair. So, who actually wins? Yeah, let's move on.
We've talked the most about your song.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most ripe for conversation.
In my heart, the Proclaimers win. Dave's songs win.
Yeah, see, I would, if I'm gonna, of all the songs, it's gonna be 500 Miles.
Honestly, because it's a textbook example of how to use a Fender Stratocaster.
Oh, okay. Explain.
Well, I mean, the guitar tone on that song is like literally, it is perfection.
It is perfect, okay. Stratocaster tone.
It's the exact same guitar tone that they use, that like Los Lonely Boys use to redo La Bamba. It's like the literal same thing. It's like a Tex-Mex Fender and like a DeVille or like a Princeton dialed in perfectly.
That's
like
probably true.
It's
yeah.
amazing.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't know what that means, but...
I'm sorry. I spaced out the last 30 seconds. What happened? What are we talking about?
Sorry, I went
I'm sitting here and I'm reading the lyrics for She's So
retard.
High. You went full what?
Full retard.
Is that how they say it in the movie? It's a different way they say it in the movie, right?
Full retard?
Yeah. Mm. With the... Yeah, the emphasis there. I just look at my... I just think, gosh, this is written by like a 5-year-old. In love. Lol. Yeah, okay. Proclaimers.
All right, I'll take it. Give up on your song,
I'll
too.
Take it.
I mean, this is how it starts off. She's blood, flesh, and bones. No tucks or silicone. She's touch, smell, sight, taste, and sound. But somehow I can't believe that anything should happen. I know we're right where I belong and nothing's going to happen. Yeah, because she's so high. High above me.
Yo, that shit sucks.
Yeah.
That's not very good.
That's Canada. That's Canada pop music right there.
I feel like that's probably like just an instance where like some dude like went in that had a decent voice and like the song wasn't done. And like some producer was like, I mean, yo, just like write a haiku. It's fine. It doesn't even have to make sense. Like, I'll just finish the lyrics for you real quick.
I had actually forgotten that your song was like popular before the, like in the early 90s, and then the late 90s was when the skit was, right?
Correct. Yep.
And they brought it back. Mm-hmm. I'd actually kind of forgotten that there was like that gap there.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious, because it means that they like created those characters, and they were like, what's the douchiest club dude song that's like kind of dated?
Yep.
And that's the one they went for.
Well, okay, so they had just the two original on it, and then Jim Carrey was the third guy. Did they ever bring anybody else on for that?
There has to have been.
Because we're talking...
Didn't Stallone come in for a moment?
Stallone?
I thought Stallone was a guest at one point in time and did it with him.
I feel like, I mean, honestly, like, Saturday Night Live beats things to death.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So you can literally pick any host from 1996 to 2004, and chances are that probably happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Jim Carrey one sticks out, but there has to have been at least one more.
And who was it that did it in the show? Was it Will Ferrell and Chris Kattan?
Yeah.
Those two?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's like one of Will Ferrell's like first movies. Was Night of the Roxbury.
That might have been his first movie, actually.
Yeah. Fact check. Murren's on the fact check. I mean, that's a crappy way to start off what is actually a very decent movie career for him.
I mean, you could be Space Hog and sell 500,000 copies of Resident Alien and then go on to record two more albums and tour with Oasis and literally fall off the face of the planet.
Mm. Now, do they fall off or just float away?
I don't know. Is it better to burn out or to fade away?
I'm just going to just look over this way and do a really weird transition to Game of Thrones.
Here we go.
Yes. So this is just, we just wanted to talk about Game of Thrones a little bit. Is everybody caught up?
We're all caught
stuff
up,
like that? Okay.
Yeah.
So then if you're listening in, right now is probably the time to pause. This will probably be the last thing we talk about. Unless we wander on like we did last episode. But just tune in about 2 minutes to go and get back with us if this is all just going to be a bunch of babbling.
On a quick side note,
mm-hmm.
It's his first big movie, but he did some other small things before that. Will Ferrell.
Fair.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But yeah, that was his first.
Nothing noteworthy.
First feature starring him.
That being said, it's probably all because of Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Lorne Michaels just drug that out and said, because that was the Catherine Gallagher Superstar. I think came out at the same time.
Yeah.
A lot of God. There was a ton of SNL movies right around then. Ladies Man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Obviously all the Adam Sandler ones.
In that, yeah.
Pretty much after was it Blues Brothers was first, and then Wayne's World, and then they started blowing up really big.
It was really after Wayne's World that really took it to the there was that initial. I don't know if you'd even call them an SNL skits. The original Crest, the Belushi,
mm-hmm.
Chevy Chase,
all those guys that did all those movies, but those weren't really.
But they weren't based on.
But they weren't spin off of skits. I mean, it was like
they weren't produced by Lorne Michaels. I don't think.
That's correct.
Yeah.
Dan Aykroyd. Because then you could go like Ghostbusters, Coneheads. Yeah.
It was '90s, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
was it?
That weird movie that Dan Aykroyd made where like he was like he owned like a garbage dump. Do you guys remember this movie? And there was like the twin kids that were like wearing diapers and like, guys, I'm serious. Like,
what acid trip are you flashing back to right now?
I'm looking this up.
Okay.
The movie's called Nothing But Trouble. Nobody remembers this?
No, never heard of it. No.
It's the weirdest thing you've ever seen. It came out in 1991.
Was he the dad in My Stepmother's an Alien? If you got his IMDb right there.
Chevy Chase is also in this movie. Mm-hmm. This doesn't look familiar to you at all. Like, they end up, like, fucking John Candy's in this movie. God, John Candy. They end up, like, in this weird, like, oh my God, it's so weird. I mean, a businessman finds he and his friends, the prisoners of a sadistic judge and his equally odd family in the backwoods of a bizarre mansion. It's.
Fuck.
It's a terrible movie. Don't watch it. Oh, Game of Thrones, though.
Yeah.
So, Game of Thrones. So the new season's coming out July 16th.
Yeah. You guys have the date memorized and everything.
Some people are throwing a party.
I'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
Here.
Gonna have multiple TVs. I'm sure there's gonna be plenty of wine everywhere, food. It's gonna be a feast. It's gonna be great times. I gotta take the next day off work. I gotta remember to do that.
Ain't nobody trying to live that life.
No. Yeah. I'll be sitting there and be like, guys, it's 3 a.m. Go, I gotta sleep 2 hours.
Never works that way, though.
Yep.
You know why? Because we drink and we know things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great like shirt. That.
What happened to cooking the snake?
Yeah, what the fuck, Gail?
There's always time. I want to eat the shit out of whatever snake that you prepare for me. All right, so what Dave is referencing to is the last time we had a Game of Thrones style event at your place, Eric.
It was
actually
themed, yes.
The theme was we all had to bring our own dish.
A medieval dish. In fact, we had a Game of Thrones cookbook.
Yeah.
That
we
took recipes from.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It was good. One of the recipes does involve, it's a Dorne recipe, so it does involve a snake.
I forgot they were regionally themed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fake regionally. <'cause>, yeah. You know. It's fictional.
Is it?
Is this real life? Is it just fantasy?
I went Star Wars.
We couldn't find. The moral of the story is we couldn't find a snake. It was very expensive.
Cheap one.
Yeah, it was like, wasn't it like $500 to get like.
Yeah, unless I wanted a python, which.
See, that'd be too much money spent on meat that I'd be afraid if I fucked up. Like I would be more pissed at myself that I wasted that much money to burn something. So it's a good thing you didn't
do it.
That's
a valid concern.
I mean, I wouldn't mind burning.
You don't get a lot of practice runs on the snake grilling.
Yeah.
No, that's true. And it also apparently just tastes like chicken.
Oh, well.
Can we at least get a bunch of chicken and put it in a snake shape this time?
Oh!
Just lay it out.
If it tastes like it anyway.
Encased meat.
Yeah. Get like sausage casing. Do some food coloring if you need to, just to switch it up. It could be done.
For the head, to get the detail, I could do gummy bears.
We call this dish chicken in a tube.
Tube chicken.
Good.
Wait, how do the gummy bears make the facial?
Well, just to get the detail, gummy bears and worms, you can like to do to make the head.
You can mold it. You
can mold it a little better than chicken meat.
Fair.
In my experience,
okay. In my experience, gummy bears mold better than chicken meat.
That's a fact.
Oh wow.
I'm so That's confused a fact. Right now.
Okay.
Back to Game of Thrones.
So yeah, I guess we have what? There's going to be seven episodes this season.
Correct.
Six next.
Correct.
Next season is supposed to be just pretty much an epic movie each episode. So all this is like for the final setup, the next seven.
So they're committed to 10? I actually didn't know that.
Seven this year and then six next.
Right, but then, that's like a 10th season, though. That's,
it so would be a 10th season.
Yeah, that would be
the ninth season.
Eight season, seven and eight.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
And then that's it? That's the end?
That's it.
That's it. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even think Martin's going to finish the series, is he? Like,
well, that could be another epic long podcast discussion, getting into those details.
Right. Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that guy.
I mean, guarantee probably the HBO series.
That guy's out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, way out there.
Yes, he is.
He's a weirdo.
He is.
Well, yeah. Well, go with it. Yeah. So, look where he's at. Look where you're at.
Fair.
That's true. That's a good point.
I always hate it when people hate on him for like doing like being out there doing all these shows, doing all this stuff. And I'm just like, well, he's an old guy. Books that he spent a lot of time in his life investing money into, and just his own personal time, is now out there, and a lot of people are appreciating it. Granted, it's a show, so it's an adaptation, but they still know his name. They still know his face. Let him go out there and go crazy. If he dies beforehand, it's not like, oh, the Lord of the Rings series and all the spinoff books for that had no plan after JRR, you know, keeled over. Come on, he could do it. Let him have fun. That was my little rant there, and I've got you all into silence.
Hopefully he doesn't have, like, some random child like Christopher Tolkien who edits a bunch of shit and, like, puts it out and claims they're fucking, like, Tolkien stories, because that shit's whack as hell.
And well, I don't think he doesn't have kids. He's not a dad, is he?
I'd have to look that up. I do not know that information.
I mean, even so, I bet he's got an overall plan, an overall script somewhere that's saying, hey, this is the endpoint, this is what the general structure is, but I'm going to take my time with the details and, like, get that to work really well.
You just think about that for a second, though. If you're an author, that's like your will. That's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's heavy.
It's easy to make sense out of the idea that, like, he has, like, a master plan, but what if he doesn't? He might just, like, bullshit it as he goes.
Good.
You never know.
I'm pretty sure he actually does do that.
I'm sure there is a little bit of that. I'm also sure, like, with a lot of things, you know where you want to finish something, and you just have to get there.
Yeah, maybe.
So what we know about last season, I mean, the last scene from the last season was pretty epic, pretty intense. We know that shit is going to hit the fan.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can talk about the best hour of television that has ever existed ever in the history of television.
Battle of Bastards.
No. I'm going to go with Hard Home.
Okay. Hard Home's solid. Okay. I like the battle better.
I think the battle in Hard Home is a little bit more shocking. It's a little bit more colorful. It's a little bit more, like, you don't know what's going to happen. It's the exposition to, like, you know.
Did you not almost shed a tear when that last arrow hit the big man's eye?
I mean,
that did hit emotion.
Yep.
But
it starts off with the killing of a child. An epic charge. A battle where we actually think they, because thank it is George R. R. Martin. They're gonna lose.
Yeah.
And then they don't.
That's fair.
And then it ends with a vindictive, well, what was a nice innocent girl who has been turned into, had her vindictive bitch moment, and sent the dogs in on old boy. Fantastic. Just whoo. It's a roller coaster ride, that episode, and I loved it.
Fuck boy got ate by the dogs.
It happened. Mm-hmm.
Good for him. He deserved it.
The dick
flare. Probably the best end of a justifiable end for you wouldn't call him a big bad, but just a big antagonist, I guess, for the show. Because all the other ones, you know, you had Joffrey who died with poisoned. It was a kind of like a, it was an awesome moment, but it wasn't like a big, like, he got his at
you
the end.
You kind of wanted him to suffer a little bit more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did laugh, though, with Joffrey.
Because he's a little bitch.
I mean, that's horrible. But I laughed as a child died. yeah, I said it. Oh, well.
I'm letting you transition us out of this.
Okay. But at the same time, you're right. He wasn't. Joffrey was nothing compared to. And then Cersei gets her moment. Cersei wins.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about that? Like, talk about.
See, that's where you gotta like figure out if she's supposed to be like the big villain overall for the entire story or what.
Yeah. Is she the main bad guy?
It feels that way for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Not that means anything, but she's in that kind of Empire Strikes Back moment, though, where it's like, I mean, she's virtually powerless at this point. I mean, she still has title and she still has like resources available to her, but like, what is she actually going to accomplish? Like,
she doesn't have resources, but they're very minimal compared to what's floating in her direction across the sea.
I mean, it's not only that, but, like, I mean, at any point in time, much as the story already involved, like, when is the undead going to show up? Like, when is that going to become a thing? At what point in time will that occur?
Do you see the trailer? The little, like, short trailer where it had...
I have not
seen it.
Okay, so the thing about the trailer was it just followed Daenerys, Jon Snow, and Cersei. As they're just walking down hallways, each in their respective hallways, and then they all sit on a throne. Jon sits at the table that he was at the end of the last season.
Yeah, the table at
Winterfell.
Winterfell.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Cersei's on the throne, and then Daenerys is in like this ice kind of thing that a lot of people speculate is like, what was it that they called it? From the books, like her people's kingdom chair kind of thing.
The Targaryen throne or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And which nobody, like, hasn't really made its appearance yet in the series. So that's, like, hinted at that's going to be coming. And then Cersei, at the very end, she just breathes out, and it's, like, the cold air freezes, and then it's a close-up of the walker guy, the main...
The king.
The king,
Knight prince or whatever he's called. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just close-up of his eye, and you pan out, and you just see him just standing there. And then, that's
interesting.
It. Right. So it's, I think that means then if they go with that route, Cersei's going to feel that attack first.
I'm just ready for Bran to stop being a little bitch.
So there's one thing about that. Yeah, where is Bran? Where's Bran?
What is his role in all of this?
We don't know yet. And then how do you get to, if you're the White Walkers, how do you get to Cersei without going through the Starks? So that's where that time, I mean... I guess if you went all the way around through the Iron Islands and that side, but if you're going through land, you literally have to go through Stark territory. You're going to confront Jon Snow. Or if you go around the other way, well, there's this giant fleet of ships coming across the sea. Like, which...
I think the Starks and everybody there, people of the North, realize that, okay, winter is coming, we got to go south. And I think they all just start heading south. And Cersei's like, no, you keep going. You can't stay in my kingdom. And keep going down and just tell them go elsewhere. But then that's when she gets attacked. That, I think, may be that setup. At least what that trailer sort of makes it feel is going to happen.
And you act like the undead have any sort of calculation to what they're... I mean, it's scorched earth scenario. Like, they don't care. They'll walk right through anything.
That's true.
And as soon as they kill people, their army expands tenfold.
Yeah. And then where does, like you said, Brand... in this Fae idea come in?
I mean, that was the most revealing thing to me in the last season, was like kind of getting the idea of where this shit even came from in the first place.
I think that's his purpose, is for exposition for the audience. When they need to tell a story, but they can't really like say, oh, back in like this year, this happened, use him as the character that's that tool to see the past, see those things, events, understand where everybody came from. Now, if he finds, like, you know, who Jon Snow's father is and can prove, like, certain lineage, And he's like, he can fuel that to like, okay, we know we got to find something that proves this. I know it to be true. Now I have to get the stuff that other people can believe me.
Or it could be like a kind of a Tolkien thing where it's like you need to understand how something was created in order to destroy it.
Hmm.
Very good point.
How to destroy snow?
No.
Or, oh, yeah. You're talking about the dead.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Maybe the only way he can be undone is the way he was made.
Right. That's kind of what that scene lent to me was like, you know, like the knife and everything else that happened in that scene was like very, I mean, there's also like the dragon glass thing that is very, very similar to like what they're talking about in that.
Where would they go to find dragon glass, do you think? Who would they have to talk to find dragon glass?
Daenerys is the only one who is equipped to even fight them right now, right?
And if she's on her throne, if she finds where her kingdom at, I bet you there's a whole bunch of that material there. And so Snow's got to like go talk to her and be like, hey, we got to make peace because we got this stuff coming from the north and we need to kill it.
I think we'll be more surprised by the alliances that happen more so than the power struggle of who gets who. You know?
I just want to watch like somebody cut up a bunch of blow with like some dragon glass so it can be called Jon Snow and everybody does a shitload of cocaine. And all of a sudden, the darkness starts playing in the background.
Just Deadpool this and break that fourth wall. Everybody, screw this. We're just chilling now.
Jon Snow's like, I got resurrected from the dead. I'm going to do a fucking ounce of cocaine right now and see what happens. Because clearly I'm immortal.
The camera pans back and Deadpool walks up. Oh, yeah, I'm in this too, bitches. What the fuck?
I think that about wraps it up.
Predictions for next season of Game of Thrones. Deadpool.
Deadpool.
Al Pacino. A mountain of cocaine.
Say hello to
Hazel. And we're done here.
Oh, okay. Well, I think I'll take that as your last word there, Eric. Dave, anything you want to say? Close it on out. I am going to, real quick though, social media, follow the Later Days social media. We've said it before. We'll say it again. LaterDaysTX. You can find that handle on the Instagram. Over 10,000 followers. Be one of the ones that keep pushing them. And I guess what's the next goal for you guys then? 20K? Double up what you got now?
10,001.
Probably go with a record deal as opposed to Instagram followers.
Well. Fine, if you gotta be that way. Yeah, still, keep following them. You find, like, their music on everything. I think I mentioned before, I like it say, Alexa, play Later Days, and it starts playing. It's awesome. And also, you have your own Instagram. Do you want people to follow that?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Mm-hmm. Kinda Jen Eric. KindaGenEric. Just on Instagram, right? No Twitter handle? Yeah. You don't do the tweets?
I don't believe in Twitter.
But it believes in you.
So if you tweet and refer to your tweet in the past tense, would it be twatting?
It would be a retweet.
What if you retwatted?
I think it'd be a twiddle.
A twiddly dee.
A twiddle diddle. Cool. Dave, you got something that we ought to follow. A website, soundbetter.com. SoundBetter, correct? There's no fancy spelling or anything like that?
No fancy spelling. I guess / Dave Hawkins. Yeah, this is my audio engineering page.
It's actually, to be fair, soundbetter.com/profiles/56097-Dave-Hawkins.
Super easy. Can't wait to see you guys there.
Yeah!
Get there in a jiffy.
I think there was a niner in there, too.
I've got the link. We'll post it up beneath the post on the Facebook page, which brings us to our little social media. Well, no, wait. I'll hold on that. Last word. Dave, anything you want to say? End it.
Gummy bear-headed snake with chicken meat, please.
In a tube.
In a tube.
Sock. In a tube.
Snake tube.
A tube sock. A snake
tube sock. 14 tube socks sewn together filled with chicken meat.
14.
That's the only way I'm going to this party.
Okay.
Fuck the quail eggs. 14 tube socks sewn together with processed chicken pink meat from McDonald's shoved in the tube with gummy bears for eyeballs.
Okay.
Done.
Consider it done.
Mr. Murren,
I'll
then.
Zima.
Mr. Murren, any final words besides giving us once again that recipe for that sweet, sweet Zima drink?
And calling Jon Snow to make it snow.
No, I think enough words have been said this episode.
Okay. Well, if you like what you heard, please tell your friends about us. Share links to our stuff. We've got some social media, such as the Instagram and Twitter, both at the handle at Jet Theory Radio. That's JETT Theory Radio. We've got a Facebook page. Please follow, like us there. We'll post everything about, post to the webpage, post to Instagram, all that fun stuff will be there. And you can find out all the information about what we're doing. And I think I'm going to be doing more of what I did last night, which is, hey, we're going to be talking about this. Please comment like we did the 90s. And it was like, hey, what do you want to hear about? What's 90s nostalgia do you want us to hear about? And we actually did. That was a good guide for us. And we picked up some good things. And it was a good conversation. So yeah, just follow us there. Website is jettheoryradio.com. And really, the only thing left to say is, James, let's end this.